Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Today is July the 3rd, and we are in Parsha Shmos on page 312. We are up to Pasuk Chav Zayin, verse 27, and because we have a need to end at a good stopping point, we may have a slightly abridged class tonight, because it would not make sense to stop in the middle of something for a very long break. The last thing we had was Moshe and Tzipora dealing with Moshe being attacked by a snake because of not having given his son a bris, and Tzipora then performing the bris, or having it performed. And now they continue on to Egypt. So Pasuk of Zion, verse 27, Vayomer Hashem al Aharon, Hashem said to Aharon, Lech likras Moshe hamidbara, go meet Moshe in the midbar, in the wilderness, to the wilderness. Vayelech, he went, Vayivkesheu, he met him, Behar ho Elokim, on the mountain of Hashem, Vayishaklo, and he kissed him. Vayaged Moshe le'Aaron, and Moshe told to Aaron, Eizkol ha'divrei Hashem asher shalacho, all the words of Hashem that he sent him, Ve'eizkol ha'osos asher tzivo, and all the signs that he commanded him. Vayelech Moshe ve'Aaron, and Moshe and Aaron went, Vayasfu es kol ziknei b'nei Yisrael, and they gathered all the elders of the Jewish people. Vayidaber Aaron eizkol ha'divorim asher diber Hashem al Moshe, and Aaron spoke all the words that Hashem had spoken to Moshe, Vayas ha'osos la'inei ha'am, and he did the signs in front of the nation. Vaya'amein ha'am, and the nation believed. Vayishmu, and they heard, ki fakad Hashem es b'nei Yisrael, that Hashem had remembered the Jewish people. V'chi ra'a es anyam, and he saw their affliction. Vayikidu, Vayishtachavu, and they bowed, they bent over, they bowed, and they, another word for bowed, in English it says they bowed their heads and prostrated themselves. So we know already, we knew already that Aharon was going to greet Moshe. We knew this already because Hashem told this to Moshe. When Moshe finally admitted to Hashem that the reason why he didn't want to accept the position of being the leader of the Jewish people was because he didn't want to usurp his brother Aaron, Hashem told Moshe, you're making a mistake, that Aaron actually is going to be happy to see you, and he is coming out to greet you. If you go back to page 308, at the very bottom of the page, Pasuk Yudel, verse 14, it says, Vayicharaf Hashem b'Moshe, Hashem got angry with Moshe. Vayomer, he said, Halo Aharon achicha ha-Levi, behold Aharon, your brother, the Levi, Yadati, I know ki daber yadaber hu, that he will speak. V'gam hinehu yotzei likrasecha, and he is also coming out to greet you. V'ro'acha, he will see you. V'samach b'libo, and he'll be happy in his heart. So Hashem told Moshe that Aaron is coming out to greet him. Here we find that Hashem actually tells Aaron to go greet Moshe, which makes sense. How would Aaron know that Moshe was coming back? Moshe had been away for 40 years. How would he have known that Moshe was coming back if not for Hashem telling Aaron to go out and greet Moshe? What we mentioned, we said a medrash back on page 296 when the daughter of Paro opens up the basket that she finds. It says there in Pasuk Vav, verse 6, Vihine na'ar bocha, and behold there was a lad crying. And we said a medrash that that lad was Aaron, who was crying over his brother Moshe. But that's a medrash. That is a very well taken point. I had not thought of that. That it seems that this is the first time that Aaron's name is actually mentioned over here on page 308, when Hashem says, Halo Aaron achicha ha-Levi, Aaron, your brother the Levi. That's a good point.
So then also in this parsha where it says Hashem said to Aaron, so Hashem is speaking to Aaron.
Yeah.
Right.
And isn't Aaron saying...
Aaron was already, this we mentioned before, Aaron was a prophet already before this episode. That's why Moshe didn't want to take the position, because he knew that his brother was a prophet. He knew that Aaron was a prophet and didn't want to usurp him. In Yechezkel, in Ezekiel, there is reference to Hashem having spoken, sent a message to the Jewish people while they were still in Egypt. This is also mentioned in Shmuel, in the book of Samuel, that Hashem sent a message to the Jewish people while they were in Egypt to give up their idolatry. And that message, the Mefarshim say, the commentaries say, was said through Aaron. Aaron was the prophet through whom Hashem spoke. So Aaron was already a recognized prophet before this incident. And that's why Moshe...
More so than Moshe
wasn't a prophet at all.
Okay.
Until the burning bush. So Moshe didn't want to usurp his brother. And here, he's not only becoming a prophet, Moshe, but he's also exceeding his brother. He's becoming a greater prophet than his brother, and he doesn't want to do that. But Hashem tells him, you're making a mistake. You think your brother's going to be angry or jealous, and in fact, your brother's going to be happy for you. As we mentioned at the time, Aaron has a pure heart. Here, Hashem tells Aaron to go greet his brother, but he does not tell Aaron anything else. He does not tell Aaron that Moshe is going to be the new leader. He does not tell Aaron that Moshe has become a prophet. He does not tell Aaron that Moshe has some interesting news to tell you. He doesn't prepare Aaron for the encounter. Aaron's joy in seeing his brother is his own reaction. It's a natural reaction of Aaron's without Hashem's intervention. What I mean to point out to you is that before we saw that Hashem told Moshe, you're afraid that your brother's going to be upset, you got it all wrong. He's going to come greet you and he's going to be happy in his heart, internally. He's not just externally, but even internally he'll be happy. Hashem did not orchestrate that. Hashem did not tell Aaron, I want you to know, your brother's about to usurp your position. It comes from me. You've got to learn to deal with this. And before you meet your brother Moshe, make sure you do some work on yourself so that when you greet him, you'll have the proper frame of mind. That's not what happened. Hashem just told Aaron, go greet your brother. Aaron goes to greet his brother, and he realizes that Moshe has become the leader of the Jewish people, and Aaron is happy. He's excited for his brother. He feels no sadness, no remorse, no sense of jealousy, no sense of loss, that it's now his brother's job. Okay? It does seem that he has a great deal of humility.
Yes.
What we mentioned last time, we suggested that she was naming him because of what had happened. That through his birth, or through his bris, her husband was being killed. That's what we mentioned last time. But we find that frequently, that they name their children based on what happened around their birth.
That's not what his sons end up.
Right, because in the end, that's what we spoke about last time. This is really going back to our discussion last time. To reiterate, I don't want to get sidetracked into this now, but we said last time that she named him, that you, the one who is responsible for my husband's death, but then when he lived, when Moshe didn't die, he was saved, then we suggested then that they renamed him Eliezer. That was the new name. So the Midrashim and the Mefarshim, the commentary, say over here that this reaction of Aaron, who agreed, must have been humble, but the Torah tells us he was not the most humble person, because the Torah tells us Moshe was the most humble person, but he must have had a great dose of humility to accept everything that's going on over here, that here we have an incredible love between brothers. This is in contrast to previous relationships between brothers in the Chumash. We have Cain and Hevel, the first brothers, where jealousy destroyed them. And then we have before that we have Yitzchak and Yishmael, we have Yaakov and Esav, We have Yosef and his brothers. There's a constant issue of brothers and jealousy, particularly when the younger brother usurps the older brother. In all those cases where Cain is the older brother, becomes jealous of his younger brother Hevel. Yishmael is the older brother, becomes jealous of his younger brother Yitzchak. Esav is the older brother, becomes jealous of his younger brother Yaakov. And then we have all the brothers becoming jealous of their youngest brother Yosef. Here, Aaron is older than Moshe and does not have a problem with Moshe becoming who he is, which clearly speaks to Aaron's pure heart that he is happy for his brother. Aaron loved his fellow Jews, and when things that were good happened to his fellow Jews, he was excited. It was something that made him glad. But, so that's
later.
Yeah, that's later. Besides the fact that it's later on, the Chafetz Chaim writes that what we learn from there is that even though Aaron and Miriam both had Moshe's best interests in mind, they weren't trying to denigrate him. They felt that he was doing something wrong and needed to be corrected, and that's why they spoke about him. On their level, they were punished for it, but they were not speaking maliciously. Right, Aaron is the road that she's the one who chases after peace. Right, this is the way brothers should react. Now, the it's very difficult to accept this. How does an older brother who has a position, he's already recognized as the mouthpiece of Hashem for the Jewish people, how does he meet Moshe and instead of being jealous but is happy for him, kisses him and is excited over his brother's appointment? It's a very difficult thing to do. Clearly this wasn't something that Aaron all of a sudden just did properly. Aaron, this is a product of Aaron's own work, his growth, and his understanding that there's no need to be jealous. So jealousy, the pasuk, the verse in Mishlei says that jealousy rots the bones. It rots a person's bones. It eats a person inside when they're jealous of somebody else. Well, it says in you take it to mean as a muscle, but it could be physically as well. But that's the image you conjure up in yourself, that it's like, I can't take it. The most effective way of dealing with jealousy is to know that, as the Gemara says, Ein malchus nogas bechaverta afilu kamali nima. No kingdom can touch its friend. No kingdom can usurp its friend, meaning another kingdom, afilu kamali nima, even a hair's breadth. And the Gemara, what does that mean? That means that no one can take what belongs to somebody else. The Gemara tells us that when Saul became the first king of Israel, he was usurping somebody. There had not been a king before him, but he was usurping the leader of the Jewish people. Who was the leader of the Jewish people?
Shmuel.
It was Shmuel, it was Samuel. And when Saul became king, then Shmuel lost his position of authority. He was still recognized, of course, as a great prophet and all that, but he lost his position of authority. There is an episode there in Sefer Shmuel, the book of Samuel, when Hashem tells Shmuel that he will, that when he's supposed to be anointed the first king of Israel, Shmuel is told that there will be a man who will come to you, Shaul, he's going to come to you, and you will anoint him as king. That's what Hashem tells Shmuel. The Navi tells us, the prophet tells us, that Saul's father, had a couple of donkeys that ran away. And Shaul went looking for the donkeys, and he couldn't find them. And then he came to a town, and somebody said to him, one of his people was with him, said to him, you know, Shmuel, Samuel the prophet, lives here. Why don't we go ask Shmuel where the donkeys are? And Shaul said that's a good idea. But they didn't know where Shmuel was. So they met some young women, some girls, and they asked them, where is Shaul? And the way that it, where is Shmuel? Where is Samuel? And then the Navi launches into this very long sentence about the girls telling Shaul where Shmuel is. And it just rambles on. You just picture these little girls, and they're just, you know, they weren't little, but you picture like these, you know, these, I guess, you know, 10, 11, whatever, young girls, and they're just rambling on and on about, you know, and it's like a funny scene, you know, you can picture it, you know, like, well, he's there because, you know, all he's just telling, instead of saying, you know, down there and to the left, right, it just ramble on and on. So the Gemara says, like, what do we need to know this for? Let's say they did that. That's the way young girls talk, fine. But why do you have to? Why do we need to read that in the? It's in the pasuk in the prophet. So what do we need it for? So the Gemara has several explanations. One of which was that Shaul was such a striking image. He was such a good-looking person. They wanted the conversation to continue because he was just such a striking person to look at. They didn't want to let him go. That was one explanation. But the Gemara says one of the explanations is because Shaul, as soon as he came to Shmuel, Shmuel was going to anoint Shaul as king. And thereby, the authority over the Jewish people would pass from Shmuel to Shaul. And the Gemara says that since Shmuel was currently the leader of the Jewish people, Shaul couldn't get to Shmuel even a second too early, because that will be taking away from Shmuel his rightful authority. Hashem had decreed that Shmuel was going to be the king, Shmuel was going to be the leader of the Jewish people for a certain prescribed amount of time until a certain moment, and at that moment it would pass from Shmuel to Shaul, and it can't happen any earlier. And so the girls had to delay Shaul until the moment when it was okay to go. It's only a few seconds we're talking about, but there had to be a delay so that it wouldn't happen too quickly. The Gemara says, "Ein malchus nogas bechaverta afilu k'malinima." One kingdom does not touch, doesn't take away from another one, even by a hair's breadth. The intent of the Gemara is that we tend to get jealous because we feel that what the other person has is rightfully ours. I should have what they have. How come I don't have what they have? It's not fair. It's not right. Either they're taking what is mine, or I want the same thing they have. There's a sense of it was taken away from me. The Gemara says that the most effective way of dealing with that feeling is to remember that all things, all good things, all blessings, anything that we have, positions, etc., all come from Hashem. And Hashem does not allow someone to take away that which is yours. Now, let's temper this for a moment. There is a basic philosophical question, which is that, can I hurt you if you don't deserve to get hurt? Since I have free will, so can I choose to hurt you even though it was not decreed from heaven that you be hurt? Meaning, if I go over to someone and slap them, how do we interpret that? Do we say that, well, if the other person got slapped, it must be that that person deserved to be slapped? You know, it didn't have to be me doing the slapping. It could have been that they would have tripped and banged their head or something like that, instead of me being the one to slap them. But since I used my free will to slap, so Hashem made a shidduch. He put two people together. I am the one choosing to slap, and this person deserves to get slapped, so Hashem put their face together with my hand. Now I will get punished for it, because I have no right to use my free will to slap somebody. But the person also deserved to get slapped, otherwise I wouldn't have been able to do it, to slap them. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is that no, the person who got slapped, had I not chosen to slap them, would not have been slapped. Hashem did not decree that person be slapped. But because I used my free will to do something evil, to slap somebody, this person got slapped and they didn't deserve it. That's another way to look at it. And then Hashem will have to figure out a way of making things right. The person got slapped and they didn't deserve it. They'll have to get some other good thing.
That
they did, right, something like that. Like, right, like a good. There'll have to be some way of making it up to them.
Yeah.
That is an age-old philosophical question. How to understand that. And you can find sources for both views. I'll get to your questions in a moment. The same thing applies over here. If it's a question of one person usurping another person's authority, so if I feel that I have something, I can have my health, I can have my possessions, I can have my position. A person can have many different things. If you take that position from me, if you depose me, you usurp me, how do we look at that? Do we look at it as, well, I had to be usurped, it had to happen, because the if you want to call it blessing or whatever it is that Hashem gave me the authority was only supposed to go until this moment, and now that you took it, it was supposed to leave my hands one way or another, and now it went to you? Or is it possible that you took it away from me before it should have been taken away from me, but you used your free will and took it away from me? That is a philosophical question, no different than the case of slapping someone in the face. Same thing. So we are not applying this concept of ein malchus nogas bechaverta afilu k'mo leiniva, that one kingdom can't touch another one even by a hair's breadth. We're not necessarily applying that in a situation where there is malicious intent. If I'm trying to usurp somebody, that will go back to the philosophical question of, can I do it if they don't deserve to be usurped? That's a good question. That's not what we're addressing over here. What we're addressing over here is that when there's no malicious intent, Shmuel didn't try to take away authority from, Shaul didn't try to take away authority from Shmuel, Moshe didn't try to take away authority from Aaron. This is the way that things happened. When things happen that way, when circumstances dictate that one person's authority gets transferred to another, we have conviction that that cannot happen without Hashem decreeing that it happen. And therefore, there's nothing to be jealous about. He didn't take away my authority. Hashem decreed that my authority was only going to go until this point in time. And then someone else was going to get it. It happens to be that person. That's the way Aaron dealt with it. Aaron dealt with it as, my authority was only meant to be until this point in time. Now it's not my turn anymore. Now it's somebody else's turn. It happens to be my younger brother. And I'm excited for my younger brother that he is now the authority figure of the Jewish people. That's the way Aaron dealt with it. And Aaron was not jealous of his brother Moshe. Yes, question.
If you believe in humility, how can you be jealous of somebody?
A person who is completely humble, you're correct, should not be jealous. Shouldn't be angry, shouldn't be jealous. Those things shouldn't happen to a person who is totally humble, because they don't feel, a real humble person does not feel that he deserves anything. I'm not owed anything. I have no entitlements. That's a true humble person. And you're right, that there shouldn't be those things. At least not the jealousy that I'm referring to here. There are other types of jealousies. There's the jealousy where I want your car. That's one type of jealousy. There's another jealousy which is, I want the same car that you have. I don't want your car. I'm happy that you have your car. But I want it also. Why shouldn't I have it too? It's a different type of jealousy. Right, right. So So no, that's correct. And the Gemara does condone a certain type of envy. We're not supposed to be envious, but a certain type of envy is a good thing to have, and that is envy, not jealousy, but envy of another person's spiritual growth. That the Gemara condones. If I see that you are a a growing person, you have reached certain heights in your own character perfection and your own spirituality, and I feel that I am lacking in that area, I'm deficient, and I'm envious. I want that also. I'd like to learn from you. I'd like to grow in that way as well. And that's a positive type of envy. That's good, because that leads to growth. Kina sofrim tar bechachma. The Gemara says it about Torah study, that the envy of sofrim, of those who are studying the Torah, tar bechachma, will increase wisdom. Now, jealousy does not increase wisdom. Jealousy, it rots the bones. No one wins with jealousy. Where I don't want you to have it, I want to have it instead. That's destructive, no matter how it's applied. Right? We don't find much about it. That's true. But it's rare that the Torah gives us that kind of insight. You know, what goes on inside of a person's heart.
That's why we need to ask our grandkids.
No, I don't know. But Clary's asking, where do we find this out from? The Torah tells us most of the time what we see or hear, not what's going on inside a person's mind. Rarely, very occasionally, we get insights into what's going on inside a person's mind, but not typically.
McGill's sister.
Right, right. Sometimes you have it, but it's rare. But this is a prime example of an older brother who is not who is not jealous, who is happy for his younger brother's success. They meet on Har Sinai. Vayif Geshehu Bahar Ho Elokim. They meet on Har Sinai. This is in itself one of the most surprising references to a place in the Torah. It didn't have to tell us where they met. It could have just said he met him. You know, Moshe was going to Egypt, Aaron was coming from Egypt, and they met each other. Okay? To tell us they met at Har Sinai means the Torah is emphasizing that point and wants us to know they met there. Now, the reason why this is so surprising is because Har Sinai is mentioned, I don't want to say how many times it's mentioned, I want to say how many times we know of people actually being on Har Sinai. How many times do we know of people being on Har Sinai? If I remember correctly, there are only four times where we know of people being on or around Har Sinai. The most famous one is, of course, when we got the Torah. We were there for almost a year. We came there on Rosh Chodesh Sivan. We had the Ten Commandments 6 or 7 days later, depending on the debate in the Gemara when it happened. And then, as you know, the golden calf, and then the so we were there for a long time. We built the Mishkan. We were there encamped around Har Sinai for almost a year. Fine, that we know. We know that the first incident of Har Sinai is Moshe and the burning bush. That happens at Har Sinai. The other two are this one here, where Moshe meets Aaron at Har Sinai. I'm sorry, on page 312, Pasuk Chav Zayin, verse 27. Where Moshe meets Aaron at Har Sinai. And the last one is after the Jews are already in Egypt. Remember, Har Sinai is not in Israel. Remember, Har Sinai is not in Israel. It's in the middle of the wilderness. Once we get to Israel, we don't have a need for Har Sinai anymore. But the Jews are in Israel, and it's the time of Eliyahu Hanavi, of Elijah, and Hashem sends Eliyahu to Har Sinai. Eliyahu goes to Har Sinai, and that's where he has a major encounter with Hashem. He already is a prophet at that point, but there is a major encounter with Hashem there on Har Sinai, which hopefully one day we'll have a chance to study in depth in Sefer Melachim, the Book of Kings. Okay, good. So maybe you'll see it. So you'll see. It's going to take a little bit. You'll get there. It's after the episode on Har HaKarmel. So, what is so surprising over here is that the first episode on Har Sinai, which is Moshe and the burning bush, we understand that is a major event in Jewish history. Moshe becomes a prophet. Moshe is given the position of the leader of the Jewish people. Moshe is given the task of taking the Jews out of Egypt. Understand, this is a significant event, the burning bush. We can understand that. The giving of the Torah, I mean, there's no greater event than that. We can understand that as well. And the story with Eliyahu on Har Sinai as well is a major event in what goes on with Eliyahu. It has to do with Eliyahu's demands of the Jewish people and Hashem's tempering Eliyahu's demands and pointing out to him that what he's demanding is too much. And it is after that event on Har Sinai that Eliyahu then passes the mantle to his student, to Elisha, the prophet, and Eliyahu goes up to the heavens in a chariot and doesn't die. That's what happens. That happens after this episode on Har Sinai. Okay, so we understand there's something very important going on over there. Over here, this meeting between Moshe and Aaron at Har Sinai, it just seems minor in comparison. This should happen on Har Sinai. Then it happened on Har Sinai. It could be coincidental. Moshe was coming from one direction, Aaron from the other direction. They happened to meet at Har Sinai. I have no problem with that. But that the Torah tells us where they met means it's more than coincidence. It means the Torah wants us to know this happened on Har Sinai. That's very, very surprising. What is so significant of this meeting between Moshe and Aaron that it ranks amongst those things that happened at Har Sinai? Okay. So it seems to me that building on what Mrs. Darkman just said, is that here we have the meeting of the leader of the Jewish people. Moshe is really the position of king, even though there was no king at the time, but Moshe is the leader. He is given the position of authority of being the king of the Jewish people. He's the melech. He's called this several times. When Korach rebels against Moshe and accuses him of nepotism, he tells the Jewish people, look, Moshe is the king and Aaron's the Kohen. That's all in the family. It's obviously they made it up. That was Korach's accusation. So he calls Moshe king because that was the position he really held. Moshe, of course, was also the greatest Torah scholar once the Torah is given, because he knew the Torah better than anybody else. Aaron is the Kohen. And we have the meeting here of the two. Aaron wasn't the Kohen yet. It hadn't happened yet. But we already learned before that because Aaron was happy for Moshe, that's why he deserved to wear the breastplate. The breastplate that goes on the heart, goes over the heart, over the chest, over the heart. Aaron wore that because of his pure heart. And this is where his pure heart is demonstrated. So Moshe meeting Aaron and there not being any friction or jealousy or competition between them, and they forge a partnership, and they from here on in they're going to work in tandem. They're going to work in tandem to get the Jews out of Egypt, and they're going to work as a team. This is not a small matter. This sets the tone for what should be the leadership of the Jewish people from here on in. The Jewish people's leadership is not wrapped up in one person. There is a primary person, but there are three crowns, and we've mentioned this many times. There's the crown of Torah, there's the crown of Kahuna, of the priesthood, and the crown of Malchus, of royalty. There are three crowns. And the three crowns are worn by different people. And we've mentioned this many times. The crown of Torah can be worn by anybody. But the crown of royalty and the crown of Kahuna, of the Kohen, is worn by two different people. Always. Sometimes the one who's wearing the crown of royalty could also wear the crown of Torah, which means he could also be the greatest Torah sage of his generation. The prime example of that would be David HaMelech. King David was not only the king, he was also the greatest Torah scholar of his generation. But he was not the Kohen. Sometimes the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, can also wear the crown of Torah. We find that with Yehoyada Kohen Gadol, when he was the Kohen Gadol, he was also the greatest Torah sage of his generation. He was both simultaneously, but he was not the king. There has to be a partnership, because these crowns are not worn by the same person. Even when Mashiach comes, and Mashiach, as we know, is going to be this person who's going to rise above all of us in his greatness, in his spirituality, he will be a prophet second only to Moshe. He will be an incredible person, and he will be a descendant of David HaMelech, a descendant of King David. And he will be greater than Eliyahu HaNavi, than Elijah the prophet, who's supposed to come first to herald the Mashiach. He'll be even greater than that. So this Mashiach we're waiting for is a giant of a man. But he will not be the Kohen Gadol. He can't be the Kohen Gadol. There will be somebody else who will have to be the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, because Mashiach is from David, who's from Yehuda, not a Kohen. And he cannot be the Kohen Gadol. This here is the first time we find this partnership between these crowns. Moshe, who is wearing both the crown of Torah and the crown of Malchus, of royalty, and Aaron wearing the crown of Kohen, coming together and forging a not just a working relationship, but one of mutual respect and honor and love and happiness for each other. And that's the example that we Jews are looking to emulate. That's the example that should happen. It doesn't always happen that way. Throughout history, there are times where the king and the Kohen Gadol clash. There are times when the greatest Torah sage or sages clashed with the king and or the Kohen Gadol. That happened throughout history. But this is the way things are meant to be. And this meeting between Aaron and Moshe is now becomes the paradigm that everything else is meant to follow. Yeah.
Deserved it at that time? We deserved an Aaron and
Moshe. The Gemara says that a generation gets the leaders it deserves. That's a scary thought sometimes when we think about our leadership, right? So the generation gets the leaders it deserves. It could very well be that they deserved it at that time. It could be that Hashem needed to take them out of Egypt. So this is what he orchestrated. I don't know.
Well, apparently, if we went up 49 levels.
Yeah, but they hadn't gotten there yet. That was in the future. That's after they left Egypt.
Oh, that's right.
Here, the Jews had to be taken out of Egypt.
So we were really in a bad place.
Yeah. 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 Now the third piece of the puzzle is, of course, Miriam, who also was a leader. She was the leader of the women. She's not in this story here, but she will be, and of course she doesn't wear any of the crowns, because that's not the way that the Torah envisions the role of a woman, but she is the leader of the women. And the way the Gemara speaks about it is Shlosha Parnasim Tovim, three good leaders Hashem provided for the Jews in the wilderness: Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. So she will be the third piece of the puzzle, but not in this episode here, since here we're emphasizing the different crowns of Torah, Kuhuna, and Malchus, and royalty.
Is that in the Gemara? It says three good.
The Medrash says that. The Medrash says three good crowns, the three good leaders. Yeah. Moshe tells Aaron all of the things that Hashem sent him to do, and all of the signs that he commanded him. Moshe does not demonstrate to Aaron. Moshe simply tells Aaron about the signs. Aaron doesn't need a demonstration. He believes Moshe. He does not need for Moshe to throw down the staff and turn it into a snake and all that. Moshe just tells Aaron, this is what Hashem said, that's good for Aaron. They both go, they gather the elders of the Jewish people. Aaron now does the talking, which is what Hashem said was going to happen, that Aaron would be the speaker. So Aaron now tells them all of the words that Hashem spoke to Moshe, and he did the signs in front of the nation. That's what it says at the end of Pasuk Lam, at the end of verse 30. Vayasa osos la'inei ha'am. He did the signs in front of the nation. The elders didn't need the signs either. They trusted. There was no need for the signs. It is only in front of the nation and at large that the signs were performed. Those were the signs about throwing down the staff and it turning into a snake, and putting his hand in his shirt and taking it out, and it was hatzaras, etc.
Who showed it to?
Okay, that's a good question. The way it's written over here, it sounds like the subject of the sentence is Aaron, right? But we know before it was Moshe who was supposed to perform these signs, and therefore I would think that we have to read this verse as the subject changing in the middle from Aaron to Moshe, even though it doesn't read so nicely. I did not see a commentary that says that it was Aaron who did it. I didn't see a commentary discuss it. And finally, Lamed Aleph, verse 31, let's read this pasuk again. Vaya'amein ha'am, the nation believed. Vayishmu, and they heard, ki fakan Hashem es b'nei Yisrael, that Hashem had remember the Jewish people, b'chira'a es anyam, and he saw their affliction, v'yikidu v'yishtachavu, and they bowed their heads and prostrated themselves. What does it mean they believed and they heard? You would think first you hear and then you believe. You heard, you're telling me something, I hear what you're saying and I believe it. How do they believe and then they hear?
Almost like
Yeah. Okay, right. So it could mean just understanding. They believed and they understood. Okay. So the immediate reaction is belief, and then they understand it better. Which is similar, as was mentioned, to Nasa Venishma. Nasa Venishma is we will do and we will understand. First we'll do and then we'll understand. As we said when we accepted the Torah, we're willing to do what the Torah says even though we don't understand it, and we'll understand it later after we begin to perform the mitzvahs. That's what the Jews said in Har Sinai. This is a very similar reaction, that they believed what was being told to them and then they understood it more deeply. The Malbim writes over here that the signs that he performed made the people believe in Moshe. Both of you said, putting together, that it was the signs were made them believe that Moshe was a prophet, and then they then understood the words that he was saying, or the words that Aaron was saying actually, that Hashem had remembered the Jewish people and he saw their affliction. Okay, but Aaron was speaking for Moshe over here. He was clearly not speaking his own words. He was simply saying over what Moshe told him. And he told him that. That means that he's saying what Moshe said. The Medrash says over here that what does it mean? They heard that Hashem remembered the Jewish people and that he saw their affliction. What are these two things? He remembered the Jewish people and saw their affliction. So remember the Jewish people means that he remembered the Jews to take them out of Egypt. They now heard that, they understood that they were going to be taken out, and that he saw their affliction, that Hashem was going to pay attention to the particular injustices that were done to them, and that he was going to punish the Egyptians. So he was going to take them out and also punish the Egyptians for what they had been doing to the Jewish people, for all of the pain and suffering they had inflicted the Jewish people with. Those are the two things that they understood. And that sets the stage for Parakeh, for chapter 5, which is now Moshe and Aaron for the first time will come before Paro. And we will have our first let my people go. The first of many, as we will see. And then that will continue on for a while. And as you know, it's going to develop into the plagues and ultimately the Jews getting out of Egypt. But we have a long way to go still. We set the stage for the redemption, but now we're going to carry it through. We'll see how it goes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great summer.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.